Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all. Welcome to the IGO, Access to Children's Rights Protection Mechanisms Working Group call on the 25th of May, 2017. On the call today, we do have George Kirkos, Paul Tattersfield, Petter Rinforth, Osvaldo Novoa, Mason Cole, and Jay Chapman. We do have apologies from Phil Corwin. From staff, we have Steve Chan, Dennis Chang, and myself, Michelle DeSmiter. As a reminder to all participants, please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes, and please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I will turn the call back over to Petter Rinforth.
Thanks. Petter here. Let's start with if there are any new statements of interest. See no hands up. Let's proceed to the main agenda for today. And I'm glad that you that are on the line could participate today. I know that some of us have been traveling, and some are still on their way home from the INTA meeting. We thought it would be good to try to have a meeting today anyway, just to discuss further the pros and cons of options one and two, to how the possibilities to proceed a little bit quicker on the remaining topics. And thanks, George, for I saw you sent a list of your comments, and I will let your voice be heard in a moment. But let's start in general. Just a reminder, we see the paper on recommendation number 4. Where we had two specific options, as we could not find a majority when we sent out the initial proposal, or at least we wanted to have comments from both of these possibilities. And as you know, option one is where an IGO succeeds in asserting its claim of jurisdictional immunity in a court of mutual jurisdiction. The working group recommends that in that case, the decision rendered against the registrant in the predecessor UDRP or US shall be vitiated. And option two was that the decision rendered against the registrant in the predecessor UDRP or US may be brought before. And here we still have to, if we choose option two, to put in a preferred arbitration entity for de novo review and determination. And we have got pros and cons and comments both from members of the group and, of course, also from the open covenant period. So let's have a look at first. I go through the option one and option two first, and then I leave it open. But if you take option one, the benefits that is noted. Let's see if we have where we have it. So. The benefits was that the court decides case on de novo basis, as this is, no strictly speaking, an appeal from a panel determination. Possible disadvantages. What would be the advantage of mediating the initial panel determination in such a case? Does this mean that the resident can transfer the domain once the lawsuit is filed? And benefits creates certainty for losing Registent in terms of the consequences of filing a complaint in a national court. I'll make a comment on that later on. And disadvantages, what are the implications of saying that merely filing a court complaint means an otherwise legally valid panel determination is now void and has no legal effect, and what can Master Register do in such an instance? And still the benefit, the same UGRP-URS process applies all the way through the initial administrative proceeding, no special treatment or process just because it is an IGO name and an acronym at issue. And disadvantages is that the risk that since the mutual jurisdiction clause remains unchanged, a court could rule that an IGO has already waived its immunity by agreeing to the mutual jurisdiction clause in the first place. And when it comes to option two, have the benefits, it's consistent with the request from the GAC and the IGOs, and it's inconsistent, disadvantages, it's inconsistent with the current UGRP-URS. And here we have also, if we choose option two, there's a need to discuss if a specific administering institution, as well as a specific applicable arbitration rules, should be recommended. And we have noted before that it may not be the best if the administering institution, the arbitration institute for this, would be an IGO, just to make sure that everything is done in a neutral way. The benefits, again, it's familiar and commonly used in commercial translations, including many of the IGO contracts. Disadvantages, thus recommending binding arbitration as a final decision from an initial panel determination, effectively remove a Registent's right to have a national court determine the issue, or is this equivalent? And here, sorry, staff, I noted that there's said to be a need to review WIPO Secretariat 2003 paper on minimum requirements designed to ensure adequate protection for Registent and a robust process. I have to admit that I couldn't find that document, and it's perhaps something that we could look at further after this meeting also. And then finally, another benefit of option two would be that it does not trigger difficult legal questions about the legal implications of vitiating a panel decision per option one. And now I just make a couple of comments, and I'll let you know when they are my personal summaries of what we have discussed and when it is what I personally see from option one and option two. If we talk about the benefits of option one, I just noted that it says that it creates certainty for losing Registent in terms of the consequences of filing a complaint in a national court. I'm not so sure that that is the fact. IGO will have the if the judicial appeal is asserted immunity, the court agreed to that. Yes, it's good to know that you can take it to a court, but you never know if the case will actually be dealt there. So I would say in that respect, option one may not be the perfect option for any of the parties in that kind of disputes. And disadvantages, does it mean that the registrant can transfer the domain once the lawsuit is filed? I presume that there could be one possibility or risk. When we come to option two, the question there, thus recommending binding arbitration, effectively remove a registrant's right to have a national court determine the issue, or is this equivalent? And in my opinion, yes, it is equivalent. Also, now to a general view on option one and option two. I've seen that some of those organizations that initially discussed the reply to and prepared for the public comments and had an initial view when we started this working group may have for just simply comparing it to the common domain name disputes that we have seen, that option one would be the most natural way to proceed. But having gone through all the comments and also having a view on the possibilities for our working group to actually come out with a suggestion that could be accepted both by the council and then by the board, and as I see it, by representatives from both parties, I'm leaning on to that option two is the best way to move forward. You have all seen the comments that is support of the option two. I will not rephrase them here, but I would say that if an IGO today brought a new DRP and won, and then on a judicial appeal asserted immunity and the court agreed and dismissed the case, then the stay on the transfer ordered by the UDRP panel would be lifted and the domain would be transferred. So option one is, as I see it, worse for IGOs than current theoretical practice, making it even more vulnerable to attack if we accept that as a system. And then the domain registrant would actually benefit from option two because it would at least provide a non-judicial arbitration forum to decide this appeal. So it will not be just thrown away stating the neutrality, but it will actually be dealt with. And I presume it will be determined under the national law on which the appeal was based, because a present dismissal of the court case would leave it with no forum in which the appeal could be heard. So option two is likely, as I see it personally, the one that will be most easy to promote and would also be acceptable for both parties. But having said that, as my initial summary and comments, I open it up for comments from your participants. And as I presumed, George, you're on the line.
George Gricos for the transcript. I submitted a comment to the mailing list, so I'll just take a few moments to go through what my thoughts were on the options. There were several statements in the document which don't make sense or simply false, so I'll go through them. For option one, the disadvantage, the first item was what would be the advantage of vitiating the initial panel determination in such a case? Does this mean that the registrant can transfer the domain name once the lawsuit is filed? Vitiating the UDRP decision would only take place if the IGO actually successfully asserted immunity. thereby terminating the lawsuit. So Vishay and the UDRP decision just simply maintains the status quo as if the UDRP had never been filed. And that doesn't necessarily end the process because the IGO still has options. They can look for other forms of relief. They can either, you know, ask for voluntary arbitration, voluntary mediation, or they can even, you know, involve the national authorities to try to intervene if, you know, there's illegal behavior. Obviously, the appropriate relief is to seek the involvement of legal authorities to take criminal action against the registrant. A registrant who obviously would have to fully identify themselves to file a lawsuit. The second part of that statement didn't make sense, that about the registrant being able to transfer the domain name once the lawsuit is filed. The registrars would necessarily keep the domain name on registry lock or registrar lock or registrar hold pending the outcome of the lawsuit and any applicable appeals. So simply, you know, having that option doesn't do anything in terms of the initiation of the lawsuit. It would, you know, still need to go to its full conclusion. As for the second point, what are the implications of saying that merely filing a court complaint means an otherwise legally valid panel determination is now void and has no legal effect? What can or must the registrar do in such an instance? The mere filing of a complaint doesn't do anything. You know, the IGO has to make a decision. You know, they could decide they might not want to assert immunity. That's always their choice. Or they can assert it and await the court's determination as to whether to accept that defense of immunity. And as we know, they probably won't, given that the mutual jurisdiction clause can be seen as a waiver of the immunity. But then the registrar still has to wait until there's the final determination before it actually does anything. So I don't think these are disadvantages that are being pointed out. And then the third one is clearly incorrect. It says the risk that since the mutual jurisdiction clause remains unchanged, a court could rule that an IGO has already waived its immunity by agreeing to the mutual jurisdiction clause. That risk exists for both options one and options two because we're not changing the mutual jurisdiction clause. So I think that disadvantage should be removed from both options because we're not obviously changing the mutual jurisdiction clause. So that could be totally removed from the document. In terms of additional benefits, the most, one important benefit is that the people that are interpreting the law under option one are actually the most qualified people, namely active judges in the national courts. In arbitration, in terms of the quality of the panelists, and obviously the same kinds of panelists that are hearing EDRPs are probably the same kinds of panelists that one would get in an arbitration, given those are considered the most knowledgeable about domain disputes. And we know from history that their decisions are routinely overturned, so it's better to get the most qualified people who know the national laws of each jurisdiction, namely active judges. Another benefit of option one is it discourages forum shopping by IGOs, and we've seen in the past the whole issue of complainants choosing the most appropriate, sorry, the most beneficial forum for their cause. And so option one eliminates a lot of that game playing, and we've already taken into account things that, you know, the IGO can file using a licensee, assignee, or agent to file the case so that, they still have that choice even under option one. So, and lastly, in terms of option number one, the most important benefit is that this ensures the supremacy of the courts. ICANN has to follow the law and not make up its own laws that replace the courts. So choosing anything but option number one creates a very dangerous precedent that will encourage other people to come to ICANN to create policies that are inconsistent with and that override national laws. And we've seen other policy instances where ICANN does, you know, follow local and national laws, like European registrars, for example, are very concerned about who is and privacy. And ICANN goes to the extent to make sure that those registrars can opt out of the various laws relating to who is and ensure that their local laws are followed. Similarly, you know, registrants would want to make sure that they have the benefit of all the national laws in their countries and would not be in favor of option number two. Option number one is the only option that preserves their full legal rights. Now, going on to option number two, the benefits and disadvantages, the statement that it's consistent with the requests of the GAC and the IGOs isn't necessarily a benefit. It's more of a political stance. You know, if we're going to call that a benefit, then, you know, we should offset that by saying that option number one is preferred by registrants because it preserves their rights. So we shouldn't be claiming a benefit in terms of a, you know, political expediency. It's not a legal benefit per se. The second claim to benefit was that it was familiar, the arbitration was familiar and commonly used in commercial transactions. I don't necessarily see that as a benefit either, that because lawsuits are obviously very familiar with registrants as well. So I'll leave that as it is. The third point, claiming that does not trigger difficult legal questions about the legal implications of vitiating a panel decision. I'm not sure what that statement meant at all, because the legal implications are pretty simple. You know, the status quo is preserved, the EDRP decision is ignored, and the ball's in the IGO's court in terms of seeking recourse based on, you know, whether they want to, you know, file a legal complaint or have somebody else file a legal complaint on their behalf, et cetera. So I don't understand what the claimed legal implications are from that third point. An important disadvantage of option number two that wasn't discussed was that there's a lack of full public scrutiny, transparency, and accountability, because most of the arbitration documents are kept secret, unlike real courts, which operate under the open court principle. You know, you can go to the courthouse, ask for copies of the documents, and they'll be supplied unless there's a sealing order or publication ban, which is, you know, very rarely granted. Furthermore, decisions under option number two would create no precedents that can be cited in national courts, unlike real court cases where they're built upon court precedent and important cases can be cited by others. And, you know, that's how the law evolves. People cite precedents and judges build upon those. So any disputes that are triggered under option two or option one are going to be very high value domain names, the ones that are most vigorously contested. And so that's where there's the most potential in creating precedents for others if and when they're contested in the courts. So option one is has a public policy benefit of ensuring that that takes place in public and creates precedents for other people in not involved in IGO disputes, in regular cases. Another disadvantage of option number two is the lack of multiple appeal levels that exist in national courts. If I'm in Canada, I can go to the court of first instance, might be the provincial province of Ontario court, and then next level would be the Ontario Court of Appeal. And very, very rarely, but it does happen that some cases go to the Supreme Court of Canada. The same thing would exist in the United States, where somebody might have a case in Virginia, then might be the Court of Appeal for Virginia, and then very rarely it can go to the Supreme Court of the United States. And we've seen some of the important cases between Samsung and Apple, and those have gone to the Supreme Court. And even, you know, there was an important case that went to the Supreme Court and was decided last week about all the intellectual property litigation that was held in Texas. And so, you know, these important issues are decided in with multiple levels of appeal, not just one arbitration that can be a coin toss in some cases. Another very important disadvantage of option two is that the UERP ERS test, in a sense, would become de facto law, and as with the remedies, namely, you know, transfer, cancellation, whereas a court has a much greater latitude to, you know, select other kinds of remedies in terms of, you know, money damages or injunctive relief to stop a particular use without transferring the domain name, or decide things based on a different legal test. And you know, in the United States, for example, there's the ACPA, which has, you know, $100,000 damages for reverse domain name hijacking. So each, you know, jurisdiction has their own priorities in terms of what the law is. And so it would replace all those with some worldwide standard, which, well, some people might like, but I think from a registrant's point of view, they would want to have the law determined by their own national laws, not by some rule created by ICANN, which is very, obviously very politically influenced, as we know from the GAC and IGO lobbying on this issue. Another disadvantage of option number two is that it actually takes away rights from, you know, existing rights from domain name registrants who have already registered a domain name. And so if option number two was only applied to new gTLDs or to domains with the creation date after the implementation of any new policy changes, that would be something that would help, you know, ameliorate or sort of reduce these disadvantages, but that's not being talked about. Because the whole impetus of all these demands from IGOs was the new gTLDs program, but instead of just limiting their desires to changing the policy for new gTLDs, where they have the protection of the reserve list at present, they actually want to go after the legacy gTLDs, which in my opinion, is a big overreach. Had they limited this only to new gTLDs, there would have been a lot less controversy, although obviously there would still be controversies over the precedential effects that this would have. But, you know, if option number two is going to be the way forward, you know, limit to new gTLDs or only domains with a creation date after, you know, 2017 or 2018, whenever this gets through, and not affect existing registrants or existing domain names who, you know, would have the rules changed in the middle of the game. At least with option number two only applying to, you know, a new registration, somebody who registered a domain name would know the rules prior to registering the domain name and not have it, you know, changed midstream. So those are my comments, and I pass the baton to whoever's next. Thank you.
Thank you. And I catched a comment you said about having this, if we choose option two, to be related to new gTLDs. That's something that could be actually worth to further consider. When it comes to secret, yes, arbitration is not fully open, it's a secret process, but again, we have a number of domain dispute procedures that are also non-official, like the URS, not even possible for panelists to look at their own prior cases to find a way to deal with the same issue in so to speak, a red line. That's nothing new when it comes to domain disputes. I think it's clear that it has a benefit. If we talk about option two, it has a benefit for both parties, because then the domain holder, if the case is not taken to a court, and the court proceeding will start without accepting the immunity claims, then at least the domain holder can be sure that the case is dealt with in a way, not just originally decided and then not possible to further proceed with if the court, the national court, accept the immunity claim. And I presume that somewhere all parties have the possibility to take the case to a court and claim options, and so even if there has been a decision also in an arbitration court, although the that national court will of course not probably not accept to take the case at them. But as I see it, if the arbitration is dealing with it, you will have both parties that will have the possibility to comment and have to comment and raise the both voices heard in that case. And talking about forum shopping, as I see it, we when it comes to the arbitration, there will likely be a list either with official recommendations or a list of what can be acceptable as arbitration forums. So, of course, if you have the possibility to choose between, you can call it forum shopping, but still I see that an arbitration procedure, there are neutral experts on a specific legal issue. And I don't know if we choose that process, if there will be domain, traditional domain panelists that will stay in that with that arbitration procedure, or if it will be choose someone else. I agree with that. It should be good to have people selected that have experience, a long experience of domain name disputes, in order to have also the experience to listen to and understand both parties' comments and sides of the same issue. So just let me check on the chat list. Yeah, as I said, George, option two, final decision with less transparency. Yeah, well, as I said, we already have, when it comes to some kind of dispute procedures, the decisions are made with the parties involved and the panelists, and nothing is official, but that's obviously a contractual dispute resolution procedure that is acceptable for some specific parts of the new GTLDs. Jay Chapman says, would option two have the effect of preventing a registrant from going to a court of mutual prior to the rendering of a UDRP decision? frankly, I don't think so. Then, of course, it's up to the court to make an initial decision on whether to take the case or not, based on what kind of case it is and what the agreements are between the parties. But as I said, looking at the main disputes also outside U.S., there are many parties that have tried avoid the dispute resolution procedures, and even if they have an agreement of it, and taking the case to court, and it's up to the court to decide again if to agree with that or not. So, George, your hand is up.
George Krikos for the transcript. One point I forgot to mention that Paul Keating raised last week is in terms of countering the benefit, the first benefit, which was the requests from the GAC and the IGOs, is, you know, what's so special about the domain name industry? You know, we don't have the IGOs getting a special policy with regards to, you know, disputes over U.S. trademarks or Canadian trademarks or anything like that. There's no special procedure for that. and there's no special procedure for IGOs in any other venue that they could identify. The only scenarios that they bring up are where there's voluntary contractual agreements, you know, not third-party beneficiaries, but one-on-one contracting with an IGO, where they, you know, usually specify arbitration. But whenever there's a third party, you know, there's no such scenario that they even could identify under existing laws where people could be compelled to arbitration. So, you know, I ask this question again: what's so special about the domain name industry? What's that it doesn't exist in, you know, the trademarks or any other intellectual property? If anybody, you know, has an example, you know, we've been at this for 3 years and nobody has identified it. Same for, you know, even within the domain industry, we don't see it in the .us dispute resolution policy or any of the other country codes. You know, why are we creating a new law just for domain names? And certainly they have disputes in other areas of their activities. What's so special about the domain name industry? Thanks.
Thanks. My first comment on that is that, what's so special about trademarks online? Why don't we have a trademark clearinghouse when you file a trademark application? That all the PTOs are reaching out to a list of trademark owners and stating to them that, well, someone has filed a new patent trademark application. You can feel free to stop it. No bad faith, but we're talking about the internet, and we are used to specific policies, even when it comes to trademarks, that we cannot see each time based on the traditional trademark protection. And also, when it comes to domain disputes, so we can see in some CC TLD procedures that have actually listed also these kind of protections and other kind of name protections that you could raise as a base for forming a dispute, for instance, when it comes to the .eu disputes, where you have all kind of name protections within the European Union, that the European Union system that you can actually refer to. And I know we have the same in Sweden, not just the possibility to refer to your traditional trademark rights, but also to name rights in general. And I'm not saying that we should add that to the UDRP or URF. We should stick to trademark identification, but that I think we have already decided upon that when it comes to disputes as such, at the first stage, we could identify an IGO protection as some kind of unregistered trademark protection, where you could refer to some specific use or registrations, and Article 60 is one of those that you could show to identify that you have an unregistered trademark protection. But when it comes to the second phase, taking it to a court, also. Again, based on what we can see from some CCTLD practice, there is a possibility to get the case to a second phase, not to get it to a court, but actually to go to an arbitration procedure. And we'll take in the URS procedure, for instance. I mean, we have specific steps already in the procedure itself, not taking the case outside the uniform representative special procedure. So this is not a specific new issue. And again, yes, there are pros and cons on both options. But in order to find something that I think could be accepted for both possible parties involved in that kind of dispute, option two is the one that I personally prefer. So, I'm sure trademark holders want all the protections of the court and wouldn't agree to procedure changes that reduce the rights simply because an opponent is an IGO. Okay, any hands up? I see the comments from the chat. If an IGO wanted to challenge an issued trademark in the US, for example, yeah, it's so what I think we. There's a good discussion on this topic today, and of course we need to reach out to the full group and also added some benefits and disadvantages on both the options. But again, I hope that we could reach an agreement in our working group rather than giving a couple of options to the council to decide upon and further communicate and perhaps then again reach back to us, or if we make some kind of how many people are in the full working group? Yes, that's actually good. I don't know if Steve have that list. Yeah, as noted from the chat, we are not so many on the on the meetings, but I hope that if we can send out a specific questions to perhaps decide or vote on after I suggest that we further discuss this on the next meeting, but when we hopefully are more on the meetings, but then to actually get some kind of decision on this point. Steve.
Thanks, Petter. This is Steve from staff. A comment about what we think might be helpful is, first is we could update this benefits and disadvantages document based on the conversations today and as well as the email from George. And then also a suggestion that may be helpful. I'm not sure. The working group can consider this. So in looking at this, staff thinks that, you know, not all benefits and disadvantages are equal. So what may be helpful is in conjunction with these benefits and disadvantages, perhaps we could put into effect some level of a risk assessment so that you can try to determine the the likelihood and impact from the risks. I'm not sure exactly how that could be done, but I'm not sure if that would be useful, but it's maybe something for the working group to consider to try to maybe input some level of quantification of the benefit and disadvantages. So just a suggestion. Thanks.
Thanks, Steve. As I said, I think it's a good suggestion. And let's talk about that offline, how we could do it in a more in a practical way so that it could be sent out, and then we can make a proposal until for the next meeting, and hopefully send it out and get some more comments and yes and no's than the also from the more inactive participants. Okay, we had, if time permitting, a discussion on a separate dispute resolution process, and I suggest that we at this phase take just a couple of minutes also to go back to that issue. And what we are talking about there is the when we started our work here in the working group, we had a look at the draft text from 2007 for a possible RDU dispute resolution procedure. And I think we discussed it briefly last time we had a meeting. And again, without going forward your comments, but I think we can agree about that this is not a specific proposal that we will have. I haven't seen any supportive comments for that, to taking that work up again. But we need definitely to actually rephrase on what was proposed at that time, and what perhaps further comments we have got from during the comment period. And even if we voted that there's no need for a separate dispute resolution procedure for IGOs, we need to make decent comments on that, so everybody can understand why we does not suggest that. So, George, quick.
George Grigos. I remember the proposal from September 28, 2007, writing about it. If folks can scroll down to page 6, you could see that it was a very one-sided rewriting of the EDRP. It was like very, very bad. If you go to, for example, 4A1, it says the registration or use as a domain name of the name or abbreviation of the complainant. So they changed the entire nature of the EDRP test, which used to have registration and use in order to prove bad faith, to registration or use. And then if you compare this test with the other test, it's like, very, lighter standard, completely different standard. And so it's no surprise that that proposal didn't go anywhere. And you can even see in the bottom of 4A, it says, the complainant must prove that any of the elements is present. So it's like a very, one-sided dispute mechanism for IGOs. And, that's, one of the reasons why a different DRP was not desired, because, it would be gamed, and you could see the kind of gaming they tried 10 years ago. So, thank you.
Thank you, George. Yes, you're perfectly right. It is not that similar to the UDRP, and the user registration or the OR word is one specific example of that. Perhaps, I mean, that possible change of the UDRP has been discussed for some years, and it may come up next year or within 2 years when that working group deals with the dispute resolution procedures. In general, the overview of the UDRP when phase two will start. But that's not for us to suggest. And I made some other also interesting notes that I think that was the same clause that you referred to, registration or use. It states, when it comes to definitions, it states that IGOs means organization with an international legal personality established by international agreement, however characterized, creating enforceable rights, etc., etc., and referring to protected under Article 60 of the Paris Convention. So Article 60 here is actually mentioned here. But then on the, it comes to point four, the proceedings, taking on the ground that the registration or use as a domain name of a name or abbreviation of the complainant protected under an international treaty violates the terms of that treaty. So their Article 6 there is not specifically identified, and I'm not sure if it should be read that Article 6 there, or if it could also be some other national or international treaty identifying IGOs. But even if we don't create specified comment on this proposal today, I think that we can agree upon that the 2007 draft text may have been a possible way to solve it at that time, although, as I said, it was not acceptable by the council. But for the procedure that we speak of today, and with the additional practice that we have had for the last 10 years when it comes to domain name disputes, this specific draft is not the most practical one, if I say it in a diplomatic way. And what's also interesting is that when I have spoken during the ICANN meeting with some IGO representatives on what they think about that draft and what they think about, especially WIPO, that is that wanted to have a separate dispute resolution policy, and it's still unofficial comments back, but what I learned from that is that they rather see something that is very similar to the current UDRP, just making a few differentiated identification issues. So I presume that if such a specific dispute resolution procedure was to be created, it would only be a few words that have to be amended to identify that this is about IGOs and how their name protection can be identified. And then again, Article 60 is one of them. There could also be other kinds of identifying. But my my personal view of creating a separate dispute resolution process is that I think that we have find, even if we are not yet decided on the two options we discussed further today, but I think that we have found a possible and workable way to solve IDO disputes without having to create a specific additional dispute resolution procedure that probably will not be used more than perhaps one, two times a year. So it's, I think we have found the more practical and also more acceptable way, also for registrars that registries that don't have to rephrase their agreements too much and have a look on if it's a new dispute resolution procedure that deals with this kind of domain name. And it's going to the chat. Steve.
Thanks, Petros. This is Steve Chan from staff again, and had a quick comment or perhaps suggestion in that perhaps the a similar document to the recommendation four and the options, maybe we could do a benefits and disadvantages document for the topic of a separate DRP mechanism. So a suggestion, perhaps. Maybe that's something that you guys would want to see. And then just another additional comment in that this text that's up on the screen right now of a proposal from 2007. I'm sure everyone knows this, but it's, you know, it's merely a suggestion and a model that we can take a look at, but we're not beholden to take this in its entire form or any of it, of course, as well. So, you know, if there's certain parts that the working group disagrees with, but there are many parts that they would disagree, then, you know, it could be leveraged, but we certainly aren't beholden to take the entire document at face value. Thanks.
Thanks, Steve. And yes, I agree with that. We could actually also refer to some of the lines in that suggestion. One is possible ways to actually identify the protection of an IDO. It's talking about RTO6 here, but it could also be if we use the current UDRP and URS, if you use that as dispute resolution procedures also for IDOs, we need a way to identify their sort of in-use trademark protection. And Article 6 there is one, and there are also other possibilities to identify as an in-use, maybe not registered trademark. Because if an IDO has a registered trademark, they can use the current UDRP based on that. So, yes, do a pros and cons, and then we have to make a summary on if we still agree about that, why we don't think it's a need for a separate dispute resolution procedure. But also, I think it's a good idea to recognize that this draft and original proposal have considered ideas in disputes and have some formulations of the identification that we can actually use for our recommendations. And George, I see you have a lot of comments on the chat. So I give you a couple of minutes, perhaps if you want to, yes, your hands up. You read my thoughts. Go ahead.
George Grigos with the transcript. Yeah, I actually wrote a blog post back in 2007 about the staff report, and it, you know, raised a bunch of comments by other commentators. And one of the points they made was how, you know, the Bank of International Settlements raised, you know, such great warnings about the dangers to the Internet if the .biz proposal was accepted. And we, you know, we've seen millions of .biz domain names registered, and I don't think a single person other than, you know, the Bank of International Settlements itself thinks that that TLD is, you know, confusingly similar with the, you know, BIS for Bank of International Settlements. So I think, you know, we've got a lot of scaremongering going on with the IGOs, and it's, you know, been going on for, you know, almost 20 years now. So sometimes, you know, their concerns have to be, you know, weighted accordingly. And I think, you know, Steve's suggestion earlier, you know, where we, you know, try to analyze, you know, numerically but quantitatively the magnitude of the risk of each of these things should perhaps be considered a good point, because, you know, if a certain claimed disadvantage is, you know, very, very minor, then, you know, that would point to perhaps option number one standing out once you eliminate some of the FUD that's out there. Thanks.
Thanks. Just better here again. I just have a thought that strikes me. I'm turning back to Steve. When it comes to the pros and cons list for a separate dispute resolution process, just we need to have in mind that that line is not specifically referring to the 2007 draft. As I consider it, it's generally if we should create a new dispute resolution procedure for IGOs. So the 2007 is just one example, and it's the example we have from such a draft procedure that have been created in the past. But we also need to put some pros and cons and are finalizing related in general to the issue on why we should not, why we think that it's not needed to create a new separate dispute resolution procedure. So I just wanted to point that out, so we're not just focused to this draft text, even if, of course, some of the comments could be related to that, because it's a document that's, in fact, existing and has been considered by all groups of interest in the past. George?
Quick question. There does exist that other small group mailing list that both you and Phil, you being Petter, and Phil Corwin are on, with the IGOs and some of the ICANN board members. And so I was curious whether they've actually come up with any other proposals, or they're still talking about, you know, hiring a legal expert, or what's going on in that group. You know, is there anything going on that might impact our work in terms of if they're coming up with a new proposal or anything like that? Thanks.
Thanks, George. Frankly, we haven't had any meetings recently, and it was still discussed at the last meeting if we should actually also reach out to a new external expert. And we have, as we see it right now, we will continue independently in our working group to come out with, hopefully, not know if we will have time to do that, but we hope to have some kind of close, at least, to our final proposal before we're going to South Africa. Or at least we will have a session there to make the presentations of what we have come up with so far. And we should not wait on specific final request for additional external experts. And I think what it was, it was more, as I see it now, non-official comment on that, but as I see it, it was more of a way to discuss it if there's a need for it. And some people needed to give some minutes to discuss a possibility of an external expert. But in fact, we also had comments from the IGO representatives that this topic has been dealt with for so long time, and they really wanted to have a decision on it. And they also noted that if we're going to have set up a specific time for an additional external expert, we will definitely not come out with our final proposal until maybe the end or at least late autumn this year. And at this time, and I will also state that we hope to finalize this work quicker than that. So it was merely a long description of no, there's been no further procedures on in that small group that we need to lay back to work or consider. Our work is to go on with what we do so far. Thanks. Okay, then we have, as I see it, actually we have gone through basically the two options for today and to further prepare for added pros and cons, and both for the topics of today. And is there any, and I turn over to Steve, are there any other specific questions, topics? Nothing? Okay. Then, thanks to you, and for once we can end just after 75 minutes. And I hope that you will have the possibility to attend next week, and that we also will have some more members that have retired in time to their offices and can participate. So thanks for today, and I'll drop it off. Thanks.
Thank you. Meeting has been adjourned. Operator.